Tonight you gather with the intention to create an opportunity for transformation. Nothing smaller than that. So as you gather with the intention to create transformation, bring your attention to the center of you and offer the center of you like a flower blooming. Offer the center of you an opening into the truth of the community, the truth of the gathering, the truth of all the information being shared at the same time. We've talked for many weeks about the fact that you are not separate, that you are all one, yet you use separation to prove yourself this truth. As you bring the flowering essence of the center of you to this moment, you bloom in community and you bring a truth into focus. We don't usually use such flowery, pun intended, words, but sometimes that's all that we've got that'll work. You're birthing the new you. Last week it was all about the rebirth day. This week it's all about the incorporation of that energy, the moving forward into the newness of you. And taking that newness of you, it doesn't launch pad like a space shuttle. It blooms, it opens inside you. It opens inside you. And when that opening occurs, it pushes out other things that are no longer needed. A flower that has opened takes up more space than a bud. It displaces what was there when what surrounded the bud to begin with is displaced as the flower opens. And as you open within yourself, you're displacing that which you don't need. And of course, that's our role, to come along and help you to not just rearrange the displaced energy, but instead to take it away. We don't want to cramp your bloom. You want room for that bloom to complete its process, to complete its opening, to completely express itself, to give the truth of you the complete flowering that it has to offer. The way we do this is simply by reading your energy field and seeing the things that have been jarred loose, and then making it possible for those things to find a new home. Part of what facilitates the work we do with you in this way is your willingness to let go of that which does not serve you. Some folks like to hang on to everything. This is why we spent many weeks talking about lack. You have to displace your belief in lack in order to remove that which needs displacing. You've come to a very important step on your journey, a very important stage of your journey. You've come to a very, very important place on this path of ascension. You're at, it's not really a midway point, but it feels like middle ground between the idea that you are an individual and the idea that you are all one. Knowing what that means deep into your body will be extremely transformational once you get moving further toward the Homo Spiritus mindset, the constant Homo Spiritus mindset. You're all tapping into it regularly. But as you start to become aware that you're all one, and not in some crazy woo-woo talk way, but in an authentic experience of knowing, the only way for you to authentically know that you are all one is by authentically knowing the completeness of you and being vulnerable in that completeness. So those are the steps that we're in now, is being vulnerable in your completeness. This is why we had to talk about uncertainty for 3 weeks, because the completeness of you is an uncertain place, thank God. Because that means it's full of possibility. And expressing the vulnerability of all possibility is really a very, 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 very important step on the ascension path of embracing all possibilities while not being overwhelmed by them, and allowing your relationship to uncertainty to evolve and give you its bounty. That's where we've been. That's where we're going. So thank you for bringing your energy so closely in, and we invite you to keep attention on the blooming truth of you. The blooming truth of you. Okay, we'll get the visionaries for you. You're welcome. You face an uncertain future, and this should please you. It doesn't always please you, but we're helping you to see that facing an uncertain future gives you the opportunity to experience the realness of humanity, the realness of being a Homo sapiens moving into Homo spiritus. The real truth of you is experienceable when you recognize that you face an uncertain future. Embracing that truth, embracing and knowing that uncertainty is the path that you will walk regardless. You will walk regardless. Embrace it and use it to facilitate your growth. Resist it and resist the truth of you. As you make friends with the truth of uncertainty, as Elohim explained to you last week and gave you the opportunity to see the steps-by-step ways of embracing the truth of uncertainty and getting what it has to give you, which is your birthright. Your birthright is to live in an abundant universe. Your birthright is the ability to know possibilities. This is a playground that's been corrupted through fear and the survival instinct and other various habits to be believed to be a limited, lack-filled place. But it's actually a playground of uncertainty and possibility. Your discomfort with uncertainty is understandable, but it has to be one of the things that goes. It must be jettisoned. And we are going to be working with you on jettisoning your discomfort with uncertainty until it has happened. It's vital that instead of uncertainty being a place of discomfort, uncertainty is a place of rejoicing. Thank you for all these possibilities. Thank you for all these possibilities. You've not been trained to look at every possibility because it, one, feels overwhelming, and two, freaks out the survival instinct. We don't want to see all the possibilities. We only want to play in the areas where it hasn't killed us. That's what the survival instinct says. The Homo spiritus paradigm says, I want to know all the possibilities and I want to have good, solid boundaries that I set based on my preferences and that I allow myself to enforce with consequences. That is Homo spiritus. That's walking an ascended path. That's giving you the opportunity to know and express and emanate and be the truth of you as a soul expressing physically in density and duality and playing in the earth game, playing in this awesome opportunity for you to know something new as a soul, something you've never experienced before. Now, for a soul to say it's something I've never experienced before is a pretty big deal. And that's what you're doing here. As you incorporate physicality and soul level insight into an experience of contest with the survival instinct. And by contest with the survival instinct, we mean the idea that as you go into battle with the survival instinct and you tell the survival instinct, yeah, you have done a fabulous job keeping me alive and I want you to continue to do that. So I have plenty of time to explore my soul's perspective as a physical being walking the path of ascension, living as Homo spiritus. And the way I'm going to go about doing that is to have the opportunity to mitigate, to modify the messages that you actually present to me, meaning present the survival instinct presents to you. Modify the message the survival instinct provides to you. It's not easy. We work on it every week, giving you tools and opportunities to have a different experience of integration with the survival instinct. The survival instinct sees uncertainty as something to run screaming from. And Elohim has explained very carefully to you that the survival instinct is a place where you should rejoice. Right there puts it pretty clearly, shows it very clearly what you're up against. And that's where spiritual discipline comes into play. Being spiritually disciplined to recognize, yes, the survival instinct is telling me I cannot. And I'm telling the survival instinct, we're actually safe. You just don't know it. That requires consistency and a lot of attention. And that's where we are. We're in consistency and a lot of attention in order to modify the relationship to the survival instinct to allow new information, new experiences, new opportunities, new insights in so that you can change the way you exist on the human form. Every week, we move a little closer to realizing that desire. Every week, we move a little closer to realizing that desire. And as we get closer and closer to realizing that desire, the survival instinct has the opportunity to scream more loudly. Because you're getting more and more and more into its turf, right? Let's say the survival instinct is used to run in the whole show, and you knock it back to running 75% of the show. Well, when you start pushing into 40% of the show, it really has to scream. Because it says, wait, 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 you need me. And you're like, yes, I need you. But I don't need you for everything. I need you for these things. And you start giving the survival instinct specific jobs to do. And it says, no, no, no. The reason we've been able to make it this far is you have allowed me to be in charge. It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But we will never go past this point if you stay in charge. And I desire to go past this point. And this is the conflict that you have. This is when things feel awkward. This is when things feel triggering. This is when things feel like they're too much for you. It's because you're battling, literally battling with the survival instinct. Why do you think we have a warrior on the council? Because you are in battle. A battle that requires all kinds of attention and skills and tools and ability. And that's why we're all here doing all those things, giving you all those things so that you can. Got it? Okay. There's a little update as to where we are. Now, Elohim's section has to be kept kind of short tonight so everyone else can have something to say because there's been a lot said without them having a chance to chime in. And we've been debating whether just to put Elohim at the end so everybody gets a chance. But energetically, that would be hard on Veronica. So we're just going to tell Elohim right now they have to shut up after about a half an hour.
I can second the motion if you need.
When we put down the blueprint, it is followed.
Oh, okay, good.
Those are those boundaries. Good night. Well, it's not that we talked for no good reason. We had plenty to say and there were important subjects to be dealt with. You think that's funny, do you, Mary? She really thinks it's funny. She hasn't stopped laughing for 5 minutes. Okay, we heard we got overruled on the new chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. She said that it was not very comfortable. So it was fun, but not comfortable.
Fun for you, not comfortable for Veronica.
We're going to have to think of good reasons to do whiteboard meetings so that we have a good justification for using the tall chair. But in the meantime, if she likes this chair better, she wins. We're going to give her her way.
We
could just spin around a few times. You'll unhook the microphone and we can spin and play. It's like a carnival ride for free. Okay. Down to serious, a little serious business. We talked a lot about uncertainty for 3 weeks, maybe four, right? But three major meetings around uncertainty. What we want to say tonight about that is that, you know, when you get to clarity, you relax. Even if it's clarity about something difficult, when you get to clarity, your body will relax. That's one of the ways you know you're in clarity, is your body goes, oh. As we explained last week, clarity goes straight back to uncertainty. You want it to. Now, that can be a little bit of a mind fuck, we admit. Because like clarity makes you relax, and then I'm going to go back into uncertainty, and uncertainty is what screwed me up in the first place. But you enter uncertainty at a different level, right? We had all those pictures last week of how that worked. But it's like you go in here, you do this work, you come out here, and then you go back in, but you're at a different vibratory rate. That's why we did all that, so that you're going higher and higher vibrational. When you get to clarity, what we want to emphasize is that when you're in clarity, let your body relax, acknowledge you're in clarity, let yourself have a moment, and then give yourself permission to say, and this clarity feeds possibilities, and that gives me uncertainty. And just allow yourself to know the truth of those three things. The temptation might be, once you finally get to clarity, to want to stay there because it feels better. And you're like, I worked really hard to get to this clarity and I don't want to give it up. But clarity is just one of the steps. It's not the end result. It used to be. We used to stop at clarity. We used to say, yay, you're in clarity. Good job, you. Yay, good job, you. Now we say, out the nest into uncertainty again, right? Because you cannot access possibilities from clarity. What you access when you're in clarity, you know your boundaries. And that's important. But boundaries isn't possibilities, right? No. And we have to stay in possibilities in order to be incorporating the soul's perspective. So you get to clarity. Huzzah, I'm in clarity. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Crap, I'm in uncertainty again. But there's that moment of I'm in clarity and I'm going to take this clarity into possibilities. It's almost like a gift you give. How can we best explain this? We see it so clearly. This is a ridiculous example, but it's the best one we got. You know, when the three wise men went to see the baby Jesus, they took gifts, right, to a little baby. It's like that. Your gift is what you're carrying into the possibilities of this new life, right? It's like you bring this clarity in to this gift of the possibilities of new life. And the more you're willing to go into uncertainty through the process we gave you to clarity, and then into uncertainty again, the gifts keep accumulating. They accumulate, they accumulate, they accumulate, they accumulate. So it will get more easeful, maybe not easy, because this is triggers, this is survival instinct we're talking about, but it will get more easeful in the sense that you'll have a better sense of the flow of the energy of it. So you go and you get to clarity, you go back into uncertainty, but uncertainty, instead of being, I don't know what to do, becomes everything is possible. What do I want to do? Where are my preferences? Again, back to preferences, back to preferences. So you don't stay in uncertainty like that little Tasmanian devil, remember we had last week, right? You don't stay in uncertainty. You take the uncertainty into preferences immediately. Okay, so I'm uncertain. I go to preferences. I see what it brings up, baggage, static, and triggers, habits, past, future temptations. I get to clarity. I take the clarity immediately back into possibilities, uncertainty, and right away ask again for preference. So the key here is you will want to rest in clarity. You'll resist going back to uncertainty because you think you have to stay in the uncertainty. But when you get to uncertainty, state of preference, start again. And it will become a flow. It will become a flow. It will become a flow. So you don't rest in any one specific posture. It's like doing yoga, right? You keep flowing. You know, each thing teaches you something new. So it's a flow. It's a flow. It's a flow. And this is one of the ways you'll get to deeper and deeper levels of the shit that's bugging you. Because you're constantly requiring yourself to look at it some more, look at it some more. You don't just say, I'll rest in uncertainty and feel suffering, or I'll rest in clarity and feel clarity. You say, I'm constantly putting it back in the machine and plugging it in again and again and again and again. This gives you lots of practice at asking what your preferences are. And that is something you guys need. You know, how many times have we said what is true now is the most important thing we've ever taught you? Because that is looking for your preferences. It's looking for the truth of you. It's looking for what is authentically you. What is authentically me in this moment is my preference. That's what my preference is what is authentically me in this moment. So I'm uncertain. What's authentically me in this moment? Oh God, that triggers me. Oh God, that makes me have a habit. Oh God, that makes me confused. Okay, so I kind of shake all through there. Oh, I know what's going on. And then take that I know what's going on into the bigger picture, right? Okay, so that's how that works. And we know it works. We know it's probably something that's going to need some practicing, but it definitely works. So does anyone want to talk about how that's been working since last week's meeting? Okay, get up there and do your thing, Deb.
It's been working like a bandit in every which way, and it has side effects and benefits. We're trying to move still. And I'm the one that's actually holding up the whole thing. Scott's ready to move. He's ready to jump into uncertainty. And I'm going, but I need to know that we can do this. I need to know we can do this. And so I started school today. And it was a far different experience than I've had before. The people were just joyful. The kids were just genuinely mellow. Although they were high energy, mm-hmm. they were, you know, just, it was like they were more in their authentic selves than they've been able to be in the past 3 years. It was weird. Mm-hmm. So all of it worked together. So I could see how I was holding myself back at school, you know, out of fear. I was holding myself back with Scott out of fear, mm-hmm. and how I felt about that. And I went through embarrassment and self-hate. And, I mean, just all sorts of negative stuff came up. And then I thought, you know, this is like a life review. I can look at it and I could get lost in that. But I could also just look at it and go, huh, it worked over there and it worked over there. And I can make it be whatever I want it to be.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Very, very cool stuff. And good. I greatly appreciate everything that you've done.
You're welcome. Yeah, for Veronica, her incorporation of this has been like a life review as well. That's a good description, because what happens is it as you go deeper and deeper and deeper, of course, it takes it into different places in your life as well, too. So that opportunity to say, you know, what we really think, because uncertainty is the human condition, and you have been trained to believe that that human condition is a flaw, like somehow you should be certain. If everything were going right, you'd be certain, so that you're uncertain is a human flaw. It's been difficult to look at uncertainty with any kind of objectivity, because you're taught from a very, very small age that uncertainty is a flaw. So when we say to you, flaw is a human condition and it's a desirable state, and you go, and then you decide to believe us and see what happens, it does require you to reevaluate your whole history, at least in some ways, to consider the fact that, you know, it'd be like us telling you, by the way, two arms is normal. And you're like, oh, no, I've always thought two arms was bad, right? It's that much a part of you guys. So when we say uncertainty is a normal thing, you're like, it is. I've got to think about everything that's ever happened to me with that new perspective. So we saw that with Veronica. We weren't sure if that was just her doing her normal thing or if that was some. So it's good to see that those layers seem to be present for you as well. And maybe that's a thing. Is that happening with more than just Deb and Veronica? You're feeling like it's deeper and deeper. Did you have something you wanted to add? You've got that look on your face that says, I have something to say. You have to get up to the microphone, though, if you're going to talk. That's sort of the rule.
Okay, yeah. I'm not sure I could be very clear. I had a few funny, odd experiences this week. So what would demonstrate the clarity? Okay, this one was the obvious one. I was talking to my folks, and I said, oh, we were talking about my daughter's wedding. And I said, well, she's going to just invite certain people because it's her wedding and it's her choice. And and I said, and she was considering not inviting my brother because he's never been close. He's never been nice to her or to my son. And my mother went, oh, dear. And then, oh, there's some triggers right there. Oh, yeah. Okay, hearing your mom say, oh, dear, that's bad. Oh, dear, what are we going to do? Ah, there we go. That was, I could recognize that in me as a big trigger right away. It's like, oh, so do I say to my daughter, well, maybe we should. And then I thought, wait a second. What's true for me, Riley? What's true for me is it is true. I've been defending him my whole life. He's truly a good person down deep. He truly is, but he's never been nice to my children. He's not nice to his children, and he has a lot of issues. So I can understand his issues and sympathize with his issues, but truly she's never seen him as a good person. So why should she have to have him just because it's some kind of a tradition? So, you know, so this was really good to just discuss. You know, Mike and I discussed it, and it was very helpful. And so kind of going in cycles, yeah, the clarity was the right thing to do is, well, I won't say anything at all, but the right thing to do is to not worry about what someone else thinks is the right thing to do. And yeah, and just live in uncertainty about it. But no, live in clarity about it, really.
Well, what's interesting to us is what you did is you went into it, it's like a little machine, you know, you could make a cartoon of it. Maybe someone will. Of you put, you know, the input goes in,
yeah,
which is the, oh my God, my daughter might not invite her uncle to the wedding and I have to tell my parents that, right? So there's in goes into the little machine and then it kind of blows up with triggers. And and you did do exactly what we suspected after talking to Deb is you didn't just keep it at the uncle's not getting invited to the wedding. You went to all my life, he's been an issue, all our lives, he hasn't treated them all our lives. So you did do that kind of spiral of a little bit of a, like a life review around it.
Yeah, it was.
So what's really interesting is it's not just triggers and baggage and static and past and future temptations. It's actually layers of evaluation that seem to happen when you guys do this.
It was layers. Yeah.
And so when you get
helpful.
When you got to the bottom layer, it was, you know, my daughter gets to have her preference for her wedding.
It's true.
And I'm going to support her preference.
Yeah.
Her preference is going to be my preference for that.
Absolutely.
And my mom and dad can handle that however they decide to.
Exactly.
And then that becomes the new uncertainty.
Yeah.
And then you get to see what, I don't know what my mom and dad are going to do, might trigger in you.
And I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And you might not be. When it gets closer to the wedding, you might have to look at it some more, but at least you're okay with it just in this moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she hasn't thrown her fit yet. If she's going to throw one, she hasn't thrown it yet.
She would never do that.
Okay.
But she, the funny thing is, she didn't want his feelings to be hurt.
Yeah.
Right?
So everybody.
And here's the person that hurts everyone's feelings.
Yeah. Everyone's protecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's afraid of him.
And understanding. That, yeah. You don't want to hurt his feelings. Yeah. But, you know,
and,
honestly.
And his feelings being hurt might be the thing that kicks him out of the habit he's in, which is to not care about anybody else's feelings.
Yeah, he might grow a little bit
maybe.
More.
Maybe. Could happen.
Yeah.
And you know, if the family said to him,
I hope he does.
Your feelings are hurt, you know, our feelings have been hurt too. Maybe we can all sit down and talk about it. And it might become a place for healing.
Yeah, right? You know, and the potential's there.
Because we're in infinite possibilities.
That's right. It is.
And that's one of the possibilities. And the other possibilities is he throws a fit. And the other there's lots of possibilities. And you're in an uncertainty about all of them.
It's true.
But your clarity is my daughter's preference is rules the day.
That's
exactly right. She rules the day. She get this preference is her preference.
Right.
And honoring that truth really will indicate to her how your relationship, the two of you, you and your daughter, what the truth of that relationship is.
Oh, sure.
That, you know, I went to bat with grandma and I'll deal with uncle if he calls because your preference is my preference.
Right.
You know, we've said before, you delight in others' delight.
Yeah.
When you, right now you're saying, I'm going to align my preference with your preference.
Yes.
And we don't see any reason why you shouldn't. And it's also an incredible thing to do for your relationship with your daughter. It's to support her truth.
Yeah, it's the right thing.
On her.
It's the right thing.
Let's
on
just
her
say
most special
big
day.
Big special day.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't care what you people think about weddings or marriage or Christianity or preachers or pastors. A bride on her wedding day is a special thing in your society.
Yeah.
And if she don't want mean Uncle Tommy there, then mean Uncle Tommy doesn't have to be there unless the rest of the family decides that their opinion's more important than hers.
Yeah. It's not true.
And is it not true?
Yeah. So then this was a real funny one that I did lose. I got pissy, as you said. I should get pissy. I returned my UVerse equipment on time. In fact, before time by 3 days to the UPS store. I'll try not to make this long. I waited a really long time for them to get to me. There was only two people in the store being helped. Uh-huh. And I waited a good 25 minutes. And I thought, this is great. This is a good occasion for me to just, you know, watch and learn and be in the moment. And I really did enjoy that. And as it turns out, by being in the moment and really enjoying that, I picked up all kinds of information, which at a later point I used in my own going through this, going, what's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with this picture? And so I get the letter that says, oh, by the way, we're charging your credit card $150 because you didn't return the equipment. And if you have a receipt, fine. Well, I always keep my receipts. Well, we looked everywhere for that receipt. And I touched it in my car and I wrote it in my date book. Receipt, yes. So I know I had the receipt, but I only had this thing that was just, you know, like comes in the back of the form that anybody could have. And we looked everywhere and I thought, I know I have it. You know, where is it? What's the clarity? But I was really mad because I was so patient. I tried to do everything
right. I should be
rewarded
because I was a good girl.
Yeah, that and I knew that. I went through that. Oh, yeah, well, here I am. Look, I thought it was so good. Or maybe I really was pissed off waiting and I was just trying to cover it up. Blah, blah, blah. So then I thought, oh, fine, that's fine. We can't find it. We've really looked everywhere. I know there's something else because we clean out the car when we come on Wednesdays and I put all the papers aside. They're somewhere else. So I knew it wasn't thrown away. So I sleep on it, and the next day I wake up, and I said, well, I need some clarity on this. And I sat down on the couch, and I looked down next to me, and there was a paper bag with a cat on it. And I went, that's where I put all those papers last when we went on Wednesday. Let's look through that. And boing, there's the receipts. Called event three times, but I finally got hold of them and and solved the problem. But in the meantime, the good part was about the being observant and being in the moment was that I knew that there was that the gal that helped me was a notary attorney. No, I mean the notary public, and that she wrote down the time that she signed this power of attorney for this young man and this older lady, which was in the morning at the time I was saying. So I'd have that as far as a physical record.
Yeah.
And I know that the two people in front of me were having their UPS, their wine sent, $150 cost to a Florida UPS store. So I had all the information that I could find by being in the moment. Mm. Anyway, so it turned out fine, but it was a funny thing, but it also really triggered me. And I thought, oh, well, you have a lot of work to go.
Well, you know, part of what happens when you get really triggered is that it's.
So I allowed myself to get pissed.
That's good. We're glad you allowed yourself to get pissed. Yeah. And part of what happens, see, triggers is another thing that you can fall into the woo-woo idea that, oh, I'm not supposed to be triggered. If I were doing good work, I wouldn't be triggered. Well, that's just crap. It's you're going to be triggered, guaranteed, and it's how you handle the trigger.
Right.
So you have to be really careful that you don't try to woo-woo over triggers, but instead stay very conscious about the experience you have when you're triggered, which is what you did.
Which is,
yeah.
Yeah, but I was kind of disappointed that I got mad about it.
Okay, that's your issue. Yes. We don't want you to be kind of disappointed that you got mad. We want you to get mad and see what it teaches you. Because there's this part of you that's like, I'm not supposed to get mad.
Right. Yeah.
The part of you that's really true is I'm not supposed to lose control.
Yeah. Okay.
So getting mad for you is just being fiery. So we would maybe re-language when you feel mad, like I feel fired up or I feel fiery today.
Okay.
And let it be something that feels like energy coming into your body that you can work with, rather than, oh my God, I might get out of control.
Because pissed sort of sounds like, hold it.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. You
yeah.
know?
So like, let yourself feel fiery. Okay. I feel fiery about this.
Okay.
See if that re-languaging gives you a different angle on it.
Okay.
Because we have a sense that fiery for you means I get a lot done. I can, you know, I get
energetic.
I accomplish, I conclude things, I start things, yeah. I can use that energy.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think I'm allowed to get mad here or right. I'm pissed off or anything like that.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
So just say, I'm feeling fiery about this and see if that, we think that's going to change it for
That'll work better for me.
Sometimes language just fixes things.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. And you can say, Mike, I'm feeling fiery toward you. And he can say, I hear you, honey. Give it to me. Give me your fiery self. Bring it to me.
Well, my real estate was a very interesting thing.
Okay.
I left 2 a.m. The morning after our meeting.
Oh, boy.
And flitzed on down there, got there at 11, worked away real hard on the carpet. And when the real estate agent was supposed to come at 3 o'clock, I thought, oh, that's interesting. She's not here at 3:15. I'll go get some pizza. That way I won't be frustrated and hungry and everything. So I got my pizza and came back, and she still wasn't there. And, yeah, I kept cleaning and cleaning. And 4 o'clock I called her. Oh, I didn't think you were going to be here until 8. Well, we had confirmed the meeting over the telephone and 3 emails that it was going to be at 3 o'clock.
Making you feel fiery over there, Nancy? She felt a little fiery coming off. You guys didn't see her, but she was like, the face she made was classic. Like, oh, I know what to say to somebody like that. Okay, go ahead, Heidi. We're listening. We just had to keep working with everybody.
So she said she would be there later. And I thought,
that makes Veronica fiery.
Oh,
she doesn't
okay.
like that later word.
So no. At 5 o'clock, I got in my car and I drove to Lowe's. And I got parts so I could fix the toilets of the house. And when I got back at about 5:30, 5:45, she had been and gone twice. So I worked there and I stayed and worked until about 8. And at 8, I said, okay, I'm going to the spa. I tritted it down to the spa. Of course, I could have telephoned her. I could have made it easy. But I was saying, fuck no.
No! I've never heard Heidi say that in the whole time we've known her. Woo, progress. Okay, go
so,
ahead.
So, I went down to the spa, stayed at the spa for half an hour, meeting a very nice young teenager who wanted to do some work for me.
Yay, your team.
My team is assembling. When I got back, she'd been there twice. And she didn't come back that night. And she didn't call me that night. And that's fine. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
And then in the morning, she called me in the morning, and I did not have my cell phone on.
Mm.
So she said she was going to be busy all day when I finally picked up the message, and that's fine. At that point, I was thinking, okay, what other realtor should I call? And so she kept coming by and coming by and coming by and coming by and seeing all the work I was doing and finalizing and getting done in really good order.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her husband both came, and then they helped me. They actually worked on the house, not physically working, but planning some of the issues that I cannot resolve, both because I don't have the physical strength and because I don't have the know-how to do some work on the ceiling. So at that point, both of them were with me, uh-huh. and her attitude, as you had thought in the meeting, might just change,
mm-hmm.
did change.
It did change.
Mm-hmm. I still haven't signed any papers, but she is doing work for me now.
Yeah. You didn't chase her
nope.
and make it okay for her
nope.
and fix it for her
nope.
and make it, you know, do all the work for her. You
right.
did everything for what you needed, your preferences.
That's
your
right. And I was very conscious about it. I wasn't mean. I wasn't upset.
You
it was
doing
like
it in a vindictive way. You were just doing it in a way that says,
I'm done.
This is how I work.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And your energy is very different.
Mm-hmm. Feels
very
good.
Very light and chipper.
Mm-hmm.
Not that
good.
You're not normally in a good mood, but you have a chipperness about you that is not something we see every week.
Well,
so.
I had the high schooler cut down 2 trees for $40 and a guitar.
Hey, there's a deal.
Well, a nice Gibson, but it needed some work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the two things that I need done are subcontracted. One of them's paid for, the other didn't get an estimate on.
So it's moving right
along. It's moving right along, and I'll be going back Thursday next week, I think.
Good. Excellent.
And that should be the final visit. And I'm thinking about putting a little putting green in where the garden was, because very few people over 55 down in that area garden.
That sounds like a fun idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just maybe you'll get someone who thinks that's the selling point right there.
That's
not, don't have to water, and instead you can putt. Putting's fun. Good job.
Thank you.
Sounds like you got where you needed to get to. Yeah. And you're chipper. Perky. Perky even. Yes, she said the F word. Chipper. You're chipper with your putting green. Yeah. All right. We have to look at the clock because, you know, we got scolded earlier.
3.5 minutes.
We have 3.5 minutes left in our section?
Yes.
Are you serious? You're timing us?
Yeah.
We can do a lot in 3.5 minutes, but we're too busy going. 3.5 minutes. All right. Apparently we have to summarize. Let's just have a moment with summarization. So as the stories show, and as Deb, and especially Deb combo Veronica Nancy triangle thing showed, this journey of uncertainty, preferences, bag of static habits, clarity, potential freak out, possibilities, uncertainty again, that we talked about last week, can lead to deep exploration of lots of stuff in your life, right? It can show you places where you have stuffed energy over and over and over and over and over again. And we really suspect that the reason that you do this is what we were saying earlier, that you have been taught that uncertainty is wrong, to be avoided, and something to even be ashamed of. I'm ashamed I don't know what to do. Right, I don't want anybody to know I don't know, have a clue, right? You can't find out I don't have a clue. That would be too embarrassing. Mm-hmm. So look for shame and embarrassment to pop up. And if it does, you can say, yeah, that's right. Of course shame and embarrassment are popping up. But it doesn't mean that that's the path I have to take. That's more baggage and static. And also look for the idea that if I was a good person, or if I was spiritually advanced, or if I was fill in the blank, I wouldn't feel this way. Veronica periodically uses the word broken in here. I feel broken if she can't get a handle on something. So if you get that sort of broken, whatever word you like to associate with that feeling, just be really aware that it's probably stemming, because this is the place we're at in our teaching, it's probably stemming from feeling a strange relationship to uncertainty. And now you have a path out of that. So keep at it. Keep looking at uncertainty in new ways and keep seeing what it brings up. And next week, if anybody has more examples on this, this is not something that's, you know, we're done with by any means. So if you have more examples, bring them next week. See if anything comes up this week, you know, write it down so you remember or whatever. And we'll talk about more examples of uncertainty during our allocated half hour next week. All right. Is that a yes? The weather? Oh, a weather report for September or just in general? Oh, the gardeners. The gardeners want a weather report for the next 3 months. You know what's really, really strange is it feels really up in the air. It really doesn't feel like we can even pin it down. We think it will be erratic, and you know, we suspect you will get at least one good heat wave, but it doesn't seem like you're going to have one of those long, what they call it, Indian summers, where sometimes it's warm into October. But it feels like you're going to get these big spikes and then down spikes, up spikes and down spikes, which we know the gardeners are going, ah! But It just feels like things are upside down as far as the weather goes. And we know that's not exactly everyone's favorite news, and especially Veronica, but it does not feel like you're going to get stabilized weather pattern, which is interesting because we thought you were. And we've been good on the weather for a while. We blew it this time because we did not foresee the energy shifts stirring up the weather the way they have, but they have. And, you know, it's a little bit of like batten down the hatches and just ride it out. Hopefully, you know, by next spring, you guys will get a better, more comfortable weather pattern, because you really don't need weather to be wacky on top of everything else that you guys are going through. But it seems like the weather is just going along with the big changes that you're doing. So we know
that's reassuring
to you.
Hopefully. But yeah, it couldn't have been more uncertain. Hopefully the weather will straighten out.
Yeah. I just you have to use the microphone. You have to use the microphone because you tell everybody else they have to.
Yeah.
The weather just seems like it's been all about uncertainty.
It sure has.
Because you never know. It's crazy. It'd be freezing cold one day, and then the next day, it'd, you know, be 80 or 90 or something. Yeah. So it just seems like it's reflecting the uncertainty thing that's up.
Yeah, the weather is definitely not giving you guys anything to lean into.
It's kind of stirring up a lot of people's fears. Like, yo, see, the earth, the sky's falling.
Yeah. It's difficult. It's difficult when the weather doesn't do what you think it should do. Yeah, it's okay every once in a while to have a hurricane or a tsunami. Like, you guys can get over that. But when it's not warm in the summer and it rains constantly in the winter and you just are like, this is not, I've lived in this town for 40 years and it's never been like this before. That does tend to get under people's skin a little bit. So we can't give you any solace on that other than to say that it's going along with everything else. It's going along with everything else. And probably as you get to a, you know, we talk about the landing and the staircase. You guys are definitely on the staircase now, in case you were confused. Once you get to a landing point, we might get some stabilization in the weather, but that might mean, okay, it's winter and it's raining all the time, and there's your stabilization. It's not necessarily going to mean that it feels like it's summer or it feels like spring or it feels like fall. So because we're sensitive to Veronica's sensitivity about the weather, she's very sensitive about the weather, and this is one of her big things that, you know, you don't hear her complain all the time, but she will bitch about the weather given any opportunity. Yes. She's not too much of a complainer, is she? But she bitches about the weather bad. She's not comforted by this last little bit at all. Oh, yeah, Richard's over here making snide comments about Veronica's complaining. Snide zipped mouth snide comments. Yes, yeah, snide looks. Yeah, yes, yes, yes. So we can't give you anything, you know, nothing certain, as Mary pointed out. There's nothing certain about the weather except that it will probably continue to be very strange. Okay. And for some people, you know, 80 degrees for 3 or 4 weeks in a row is good. Mary George likes it. She says it's a thumbs up. Every other person thinks it's a thumbs up. We're not going to let Veronica chime in.
She needs to move because it's just not going to be hot like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. She did say the other day the only thing that would ever take her out of Sonoma that she's aware of is the fact that she wants to go where it's warmer. It's not warm enough in Sonoma for her anymore when the weather's like this. So... not that that seems like it's going to happen anytime soon, but that is the only thing she does not like about living here, is it's not hot enough anymore. It used to be, but it's not anymore. So, what, she's going to go live in the desert? Fat chance of that. Like, you know, a line item on the budget would have to be sunblock, right? It'd be like rent, car payment, sunblock. So we're not doing that either. Not to worry. It's all good. She's not running away from Sonoma. Don't anybody get triggered. That's all we need. Oh, Veronica's moving away from Sonoma. When we're going to have the meeting and all. No. We don't see that happening anytime soon. What? Are you telling us to shut up? Are you giving us the hook?
Uh-huh. That's your job.
She's giving us the freaking hook. She's giving us the hook. All right, fine. Let's drink a little water and then we're going. It's been fun. You guys have been very brave these last few weeks. This hasn't been light information that we've been talking about. Good. I'm glad it's helpful. It's been intense. Hopefully it'll mellow out a little bit as you get more accustomed to it. All right. So who comes next? The girls, yeah? It's been so while. We have almost forgot. All right. Well, the order, you know, the order. Because then they moved and Fred's before the warrior now. And all right. We're done. Good night. It's been a while, hasn't it? Yeah. Ah, thank you. We're back. We never really were gone, right? You know that, of course. We were hanging around, being part of the circle but not talking is a very interesting experience. Energetically, of course, we're here to support your growth and to support you finding your truth. However that shows up. If we never got to talk to you again, we'd still be doing that. But it is nice to talk because every once in a while we feel like each of the different council members can give a different perspective on a subject that's been bantied about. And this uncertainty thing is really interesting to us. Because you know we're all about love yourself, love yourself, love yourself. And we're all about finding new ways to love yourself. What are the new ways to love yourself? Because you haven't been taught how to love yourself, therefore you haven't been taught all the possibilities of loving yourself. So when you're up there thinking about all the possibilities you want to consider, make sure that on the list of possibilities is ways to be gentle with yourself, ways to be kind to yourself, ways to love yourself well, ways to be in a position of supporting your desires. Sometimes when you guys set preferences, you set them from a position of frustration. You set them from a position of desperation. You set them from a position of, I have no other choice. And the nice thing about this uncertainty tool that Elohim gave you is that the preferences thing isn't set from any of those negative low vibrational states. It's set from, what is my truth? So be cautious if you find yourself using this tool and you feel that kind of low vibrational energy around setting a preference. Like a defensive posture around preference setting, that instead you say, wait, scratch all that. I want to set my preference from what is my truth? What is my truth? What is kindest to me? That's a really, really good question to ask yourself in this thing. I'm uncertain about XYZ. What is the kindest thing I could do for me? You can also say it as, what is the thing I would do if I didn't have to consider anyone else's feelings? Now, you may not act on that, but it's good to know. It's good to know what you would do if you didn't make it right for everybody else first, or make sure everybody else is happy. What would you do if you were actually self-centering and focusing on what you need? And then if you need to, you can factor in what other people have to say or what you believe their feelings about something might be. But it is really illuminating at times to ask yourself, what is the thing I would do if I didn't have to care about anyone else's feelings? What is the thing that I would do if it didn't matter how anybody else might react? And then just factor that into your preference setting. Because if you don't know what that is, then you don't know that sort of boundary point around your preferences. Like my preference is to have a new car. Just pick something, right? And then if I didn't have to care about anybody else's feelings, maybe I could get the car that's really fast instead of the economical hybrid, you know, where people are going to look at me and say, ooh, your car doesn't get good gas mileage, you're bad on the planet, right? Like, just to know that truth of you. What is the truth of me? What is the sense I have about what I would want or buy or prefer if I didn't have to factor in what society says or what mom says or what my boss says? Just to kind of fill out your preference bubble. Let's call it your preference bubble, right? I have all these preferences about my bubble. And in that preference is to have a real fast car and not make my preference based on what kind of gas mileage it gets Or my preference is to have, you know, a luxury car when my friends might think I should have gotten something more economical. Or my preference might be to get an SUV because driving a big car makes me feel more comfortable being up high off the road. And I don't have to, maybe I have to deal with the judgments of people who think my car's, you know, a gas hog or takes up too much space or whatever you might think that people think. So it's really kind to yourself to discern your preference without other people's influences. And then you can take some of their influences into account if you care to. But starting from that ground level place of knowing just what's true for you first, and then moving into how you want to get clarity. Now, of course, if you start with just what's true for you first, and then you hear your mom's voice saying, oh, that's a waste of money, or you hear your boss's voice saying, you know, oh, that big old car takes up half the parking lot, or you hear these different voices, of course, then that becomes the baggage and static that you look at to discern whether or not those voices are something helpful and constructive in you setting a preference, or if they're just habitually telling you something that is actually not currently valid in your reality, but is the past or the future sneaking its noses in. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. We're glad it's helpful. It's one of those things that sometimes you can forget to ask because you have been taught that it's selfish. But you know, we like self-centering. You really can't love yourself 100% unless you're willing to know 100% what your preference is without other influences. And it doesn't mean you don't take anybody else's feelings into account. It just means you know what your feelings are first, and then you take other people's feelings into account, not the other way around. That you've all been taught to do it the other way around. And it makes it really hard to know the truth of you. It makes it really hard to know who you are if who you are has to be run through 58 other people's filters before it gets to you. And especially when those 58 other filters are projections. I think they think this becomes more important than what I know about me. It is exhausting to be human. You guys wear yourselves out. I think they think this, therefore I think I should do that. Wow. How about this is my truth? And I'm embarrassed or ashamed or proud or distraught, whatever you are. You can actually deal with a real feeling that you have rather than I think they think, therefore I have to think. Can you imagine that t-shirt? I think they think, therefore I have to think this. People will be like, yeah, I do that every day. Because you do. So there you go. There's another little bumper stinker for you. I've given up on I think they think, therefore I have to think this. And I just do whatever the fuck I want. Suck it. Yeah, we missed you guys. All right, it's Fred's turn. Good night. No, thank you. Thank you. Oh, okay. Spinny, spinny, spinny down into the body. Spinny, spinny, spinny down into the body. Woo! Ha, we're here. Okay. Important thing number one is that when you are doing this whole uncertainty, preferences, baggage, static triggers, blah, 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 that whole thing, when you get to possibilities, part of what happens in possibilities, Elohim said it could be called potential freakout. Because when you get to possibilities, what can happen in possibilities is overwhelm. Remember, your survival instinct does not want you to be in possibilities because it's kept you alive by limiting input. So when you go into possibilities, that's part of why it can be potential freakout, is because you can be overwhelmed by what you find when you're in possibilities, especially as you're new at this. So don't forget the 10 things tool, right? You can go into possibilities and then say, holy crap, there's a lot of stuff here. I'll just pick 10. Or I can ask the crown chakra to slow down. We've talked about that, right? Mm-hmm. Just say, it's all well and good to acknowledge infinite possibilities, but I don't have to interact with infinite possibilities because after all, I'm being human right now and that's impossible. So don't use this as an opportunity to stall out in beating yourself up because you can't incorporate all the possibilities or stall out in deer in the headlights because you are in overwhelm. It's acknowledge there's infinite possibilities and discern which one you're drawn to, which one resonates with you, which one feels like the most fun, which one seems most interesting. Let yourself discern what of those possibilities is fabulous. Don't feel like you have to take them all in. This is our example that we talked about before, where you don't go to the rock concert and listen to it turned all the way up. You don't get the most out of it if it's turned all the way up, right? You go to the rock concert and they put it someplace nearly all the way up, but not quite. And then you get more out of it. So don't feel like if you don't incorporate every single possibility into this thing that you're not doing it right. It's just acknowledging infinite possibilities and then discerning which one feels the best to incorporate and interact with for you at that time. And you can always change and you can do it again. You can do it some other way the next time. There isn't a big rule of law here, right? This is freedom for you to express the truth of you. And the truth of you is that as a human, you cannot incorporate infinite possibilities, but you can acknowledge they're there and use your discernment to experience the ones that you're most resonating with at this time. Yeah, that's a big deep breath. Mm-hmm. It's important to note. Important to note. Important thing number one, right? Important thing number two is that as you go through this process and you give yourself this opportunity, that you recognize you're doing something very deep. This is big work. This is not light. This is not small. This did not come 8 years ago. This came this year. Right? This wasn't 2002 teaching. This is 2011, almost done 2011 teaching. So there's a reason why it didn't come before now, and it's because you had to be ready to do battle with the survival instinct. And we don't say do battle in a light way, and we know earlier on they talked about do battle. We don't mean that in any sort of metaphorical way. We mean you're literally grappling, like on a wrestling mat. You know, you're grappling with the survival instinct. And part of you can come to a position where you look at the survival instinct and you could get some ungrateful energy back. It's a little bit like when, let's say, your parents want to pay for your child or your college education, but instead you run off to India to live in an ashram. And they think you're ungrateful because you didn't take their path. And you know you're taking the path that represents the truth of you, right? So the survival instinct in this example is kind of like the authority figure that says, we know what's best for you and look at all this that we've done for you. And you are the willful, aware, knowing the truth of you youngster who says, yeah, pops, but I want to go to India and live in the ashram. I don't want to go to college. Now, that I am ungrateful feeling might pop up to say, oh, I'm ungrateful because I have not followed what this authority figure, the survival instinct is quite an authority figure in your lives. So I'm not following what the authority figure survival instinct wants for me. I'm rebelling. You might feel rebellious energy, which some of you like, but maybe some of you are uncomfortable with. You might feel ungrateful energy come up. It might bring up some of your authority figure issues because it does hold that place in your energy field. And when you push against it the way you're having to push against it here, it can trigger you in those ways. So if you find yourself feeling some of that energy, hopefully now you'll know what to do with it, which is mostly just to say, yes, you've been a good authority figure in my life. I'm so grateful. And I'm not asking you to leave. I'm just saying we have to renegotiate some boundaries here. You could give me the money to pay for the plane ticket to go off to India. That'd be great. And you could send me, you know, $500 a month while I'm there. That'd be sweet too. Infinite possibilities. You get it? Mm-hmm. It's important, right? Yes. Yeah. All right.
Warriors next.
Good night. You're welcome. We wanted to tell you about something that we were talking to Veronica about the other day because we think it will be interesting to you. And if it's not, well, it's interesting to us. Okay. So it's bad when you have to ask them to laugh. We were trying to give a visual about this idea that Elohim has taught you guys, this uncertainty idea. We were trying to give a visual to help everyone see kind of what we were talking about. The idea here is that you're going into battle, and the armor that you wear, right, is your awareness of your preferences, right? Because preferences are sort of a boundary, right? So you armor yourself with preferences. And you wear a helmet that narrows your field of vision to the moment. Mm-hmm. And you carry a big sword because it makes you a badass. It's always just good to be a badass. And it also allows you to cut away the cords, the habits, the baggage, the static that you feel clinging to you. Those things that tell you who you are that aren't real. They're coming toward you rather than emanating from you. Got it? Mm-hmm. So you use your big badass sword to cut those away. And we mean this literally. You can imagine yourself pulling a sword and cutting when you feel those habits, baggage, and static coming along. You feel yourself pull and cut. And use that as a visual. You can spin in a circle. If you put your sword here and spin in a circle, you know, it cuts away a lot. It cuts away a lot. And you have these great shoes that have protective metal on them to protect your feet. Because you just never know in the melee of battle what your poor feet go through. It's amazing. And those big shoes give you the opportunity to feel grounded and feel attached to this planet that you're on. Not that you ground by sending your energy into the planet the way you all used to do, but that you feel solid in your intention to do battle, right? That you feel a connection to the battlefield. And of course, all the tools that we've taught you over the years, you carry them about, maybe around your belt, right? And you have them ready. What is true now? Choose and choose again. Shovel or ladder. Whatever the ones you like. Short factual statements. I'm tempted to. Circle of possibilities. Whichever one is handy. But you keep them close by in all those little pockets we've told you about so many times. So you go dressed for the battle. You go dressed for the battle. You go in acknowledgement of the battle. Now, many lightworkers and other woo-woo types don't like to admit that they're in a battle. They don't want to be in a battle. They're against wars. They're against battles. They want peace and harmony. And we understand the sentiment, and we call bullshit on it. We call bullshit on it because we look inside of each and every one of you, and we see you at war. Now, does that mean you should go bomb other countries? We don't know. We're not involved in your political arena. We certainly, given the tools, would have bombed various people that we have to deal with. It's much easier than sending people in that we love with a sword. So are we against war? You are talking to the warrior. Do we seek battle in a bloody type way? Of course not. Do we turn from it? Of course not. Are we in a constant battle within ourselves? Absolutely. And we tell you truly, you are as well. And it's good to own that. You're in a battle with your habits. You're in a battle with your past. You're in a battle with people's other people's opinions and how they influence you or don't influence you. You're in a battle with your relationship to authority figures. You're in a battle with your relationship to money. You're in a battle with relationship to lack. And you might not like calling it a battle, but we sure as hell see you at war with it. You struggle with it. You grapple with it. You wrestle with it. All those things to us are aspects of war. So when you say, I'm at war with my habits, it's honest. And what it brings up is good to look at. What does it bring up to say the word war in relation to myself? It's something good to know. It's just something good to know. And if you have judgments about that, that's something good to know as well. You have an opportunity here to be honest with yourself about the nature of the encounter you're in. And we know some people will disagree with this assessment, and that's fine. But the reality is, when we look into your energy field, we see you grappling, wrestling, battling, at war with what you are experiencing as you try to grow. A little baby tries to walk, it's at war with gravity. It just is. If you don't like the word war, pick another one. But we like that word because it's for us a reality. A baby trying to learn to walk is doing battle with the reality of gravity. You do battle with the reality of the way your habits try to tell you who you are. And you especially do battle with authority figure issues. And we're glad it was brought up that sometimes this exploration of uncertainty can lead to authority figure realizations, because we see that actually energetically as one of the big places that you can slip up in this, because so many of you have issues around how you interact with authority figures, that it can slip you out of your power if you go onto the track of an authority figure thing and lose sight of the fact that you're exploring uncertainty. So we're really glad that was brought up. We'll close with a reminder that you go into battle, but you do not go into battle alone, and you do not go into battle unarmed, and you do not go into battle without your proper clothing and gear. You go into battle well prepared. That is what the council has done for you. They have well prepared you for this experience. And now it's up to you to take what you know and go into battle with your survival instinct, with your own internal demons, if you want to call them that, and you will prevail. There's no doubt you will prevail. But you must be willing to stand on the field and to look across and see the enemy, to see the foe, and say, honestly, you are something I wish to change. I wish to remove your influence from my life. I wish to transform the way you interact with me. I wish to grow. And as you make those statements, as you make that commitment, as you put that emphasis on your experience of you, you give yourself the opportunity to be victorious. And in the victory comes humility, because you know what you had to go through to get there. You have the humble victor who is grateful and blessed by the immensity and enormity of the journey. And that's the gift you give to others, is you walk around emanating out that truth. Emanating out that reality, emanating out that gift. That is who you are as you walk on this path. Whether you agree with our war metaphors or not, we could care less. But that's how we experience you. We experience you as fellow warriors, right? We stand together, brothers in arms, side by side. We've bled together. Nothing changes that. We bleed together, and we heal together, and we grow together, and we become something we were not. We are honored to serve beside you in this way, and we will continue to do so. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's always nice when the entire council can be present because there's such a completeness to the energy. Those two or three meetings where Elohim did most of the speaking, we're just considering it kind of one big long meeting that got spread out. Elohim's part was just really long. They did a fine job, though, explaining things that we couldn't explain. We can't write on that board. We just can't do it. But nonetheless, we held the energy. We held the energy of what we see is you at the place where this uncertainty process is second nature. It just happens. We see you in a place where you can say to each other, oh, yes, I'm completely uncertain. I'm uncertain. How are you today? Uncertain. How are you? Oh, I'm uncertain too. Really? What was your last clarity? My last clarity was I want to XYZ. Wow. What's your new static? Right? Because you delight in it because it's such a revelation. Revelation. What's my new uncertainty today? When did you last have clarity? Did you get freak out? Was the possibilities too much? These are conversations that it would be very, very extraordinary to hear you having with each other. When's your last clarity? It's like, did you remember to take your pill? What was your last clarity? Was it a good one?
Oh dear.
Let's write it down. It's a little early today. We love you. And we're so grateful and honored to watch you progress and move through this energy. And we will stand here with you, knowing that you've already come to a place where this feels natural, normal, and supportive, as you still have to remember the steps. Someday it will feel natural, and it won't take long. It's too real for it to be hard for long. And with that, we'll say good night for everyone. Good night.
Good night.
You're very welcome.